Time is 11:02, March 30th, 2023, and it's called the meeting of Committee of Behavior Analyst Order. The meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and been supplied with meeting access instructions. Please note that the committee is holding a two-day meeting. I will be serving as chair for today's meeting as Ms. Denton is recused from all matters scheduled for the review today. She'll resume as chair for tomorrow's meeting. So, Ms. Pakenham, would you please do roll for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Ms. Denton? Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Davey?
Present.
And Dr. Rates?
Present.
Mr. Chair, you have a quorum.
Great. Thank you. And thank you, board staff, for the work of putting this huge documents together across all these, and again for the work that you all do, and Ms. Galvin for being here to offer us legal advice, much appreciated. My committee members also just for the work that you're doing today and tomorrow to review these cases. Also want to welcome everybody that is here from the public, whether here for because of on the agenda or observing. I noted that there's several students and agency representatives here as well. And so thanks for being here to participate in this in today's discussion. So another matter to discuss is the Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the board's committee on behavior analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification and for Arizona licensure renewal. To claim this credit, make note of code words provided hourly throughout the meeting by Ms. Michelson. I believe you're still doing that, right, Ms. Michelson? To report the code words for board staff for purposes of earning continuing ed credit, look for the link on the board's meetings page for this particular meeting. So first agenda item number four, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding complaints and recommendations to the board. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed or is subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after a second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children in the complaint. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in public meeting. The committee may go to an executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Gene Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves a right to change the order of the meeting on the agenda based on parties present and request to speak. Committee members, by way of reminder, the case reviews on today's agenda are not evidentiary hearings. The committee's legal purpose is to recommend to the Board of Psychologist Examiners possible findings of the fact, potential conclusions of law, and suggest the board consider taking certain actions. In order to accomplish our work today, please be succinct during the case discussion deliberation. So we'll start with complaint number 23-18, Paige Huff. Dr. Davey, the lead on that. Before we proceed, are there any recusals for this case? Okay. Dr. Davey, you're assigned as lead, so would you please provide an overview of this case?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So with regard to complaint number 2318. Board staff received a complaint on or about October 19th of 2022 that had various allegations of misconduct that were put forth, perhaps been done by Ms. Huff. The information that was provided in terms of the complaint was really around, to summarize, kind of a lack of supervision, some question with regard to when hours could be begun with in terms of being able to count towards either indirect or direct supervision hours. There was question around a contract that was signed with regard to supervision, and then also made a point to the complainant also made a point to highlight that she was charged for the supervision that she received as she left the company prior to one of the covenants outlined in the contract. With regard to, kind of the response to these allegations, Ms. Huff provided a significant amount of documentation related to supervision, including information from a third-party software that was checking supervision that was accessible by both the complainant and those supervising. Also provided information with regard to just the timeline and the amount of feedback, both in terms of professional feedback as well as clinical feedback that was provided to the complainant. That is my summary, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Board staff, do you know whether CA is present? I don't note the attendance of the complaint.
Mr. Chair, I do not see that she is present. She previously relayed to me that she would be unable to attend today due to her work schedule. However, I see Ms. Huff is present, so we can move to her.
Great, thank you. And then Ms. Huff, are you represented by an attorney? I think you'll need to unmute yourself as well.
Hello?
There, we can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, so just to address my question again, are you represented by an attorney this time?
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, so go ahead and state your full name for the record, and this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following your statement, so feel free to go ahead and speak.
Yeah, my name is Paige Huff. I have the complaint from Chloe and I have reviewed it. I went through her contract. The company had decided to change the contract to have a month notice, especially with a lot of people just leaving. We thought that it was important for them to be able to transition from cases, especially being in that supervisee role. So we changed the contract and Chloe signed it. We have documentation I submitted with her on a Teams message showing that she was currently in ABA courses, and as well as documentation of the meeting that we had to go over what supervision would look like, what each component involved in it, and like how she would be growing through the company. We had multiple supervision meetings, and if you look through her Ripley, her like supervision log, it discusses those meetings as well. And like who was present, she documented a lot of notes about everything that was done. We had overlaps where we went through data with clients. We talked about, we had overlaps with parent training where we, she was only in her supervision for a couple months, but you know, like how to present to families, how to go through programs, how to go through different, items like terminology and all of that. We went through how to look at data, behaviors, started working on like writing VIPs. I know that she mentioned that she was not like competent to supervise, but when we were doing it, she was starting to get the feedback and doing it and like just kind of practicing in the time that she had admin time outside of her direct sessions. If she did change from her coursework, it wasn't told to me. The only thing that I had was a screenshot provided showing that she was in her current ABA course, which you can see as one of them. Chloe teams me and said she was leaving.
Ms. Huff, I would ask that you please use her initials and not her name. Thank you.
Okay, sorry. CAA teams me and told me that she was leaving. She had already signed the contract, so I told her that she would owe that money. And then that's when she said that she was not in coursework, and that's not what was demonstrated to me. So we still had her owe the amount. You can see in the documentation that all of her logs are provided. All of the supervision is counted for on there.
Okay. Ms. Huff, anything further?
No, not at this moment.
Okay. All right. Committee members, do any of you have questions for Ms. Huff?
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, can you hear me? Oh, thank you. I thought maybe I lost you or you lost me. But I'm found. I think in reviewing the complaint, I have a couple of questions. One, Ms. Huff, if you wouldn't just mind, elaborating on the discussion around the backdated contract, that meeting when the contract was put forth, and kind of your recollection around those activities, I would appreciate that.
We had discussed the contract multiple times, so we had seen it in meetings, stuff like that. I remember signing one with her and then looking back and saying that we didn't. So we went and we met about it and we signed it. But that was all I remember. We had a lot of meetings in regard to the contract because she had a lot of questions about it. So, yeah.
And in reviewing that, the date on there is August 8th, in terms of the signatures by both the complainant and yourself. And then I went through the supervision logs with regard to, that were provided through your field work tracker. And when I go back to kind of like the start of those, it does appear that the first date that's loaded in with any particular hours is also that date of the 8th. Is that a correct correct capture of when supervision began for this individual with regard towards their working towards their degree?
Yes.
And towards their certification, I'm sorry. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. And then my final question is with regard to that, starting coursework before they can essentially accumulate hours. Can you, for the sake of the board as well as others, just describe to us what you know to be the process? You are someone who does supervise individuals that are working towards certification. I can see that, I reviewed your contract. I can see that you've taken that, from the example that the BACB provides and have inserted a couple of other sections into it, which I think is a solid step in terms of the contract. But talk to me a little bit about this disconnect between what the trainee thought in terms of when they could be beginning the collection of hours versus when they actually started.
Yeah, so we had a meeting that went over with, there was another person who was starting coursework at the same time. So we went through, and one of the things, because in my past experience, I've seen people lose a lot of hours because they weren't actually in ABA courses. So that is one of the reasons why I really like the pre-experience supervision checklist. So I typically print those out for them. I like to go through, she was going to Capella, which is the school I went to. So I kind of know the class codes that go along with the ABA courses. So I went through that and just discussed, like, you're doing a psychology program. So you might start a psychology course, but that doesn't mean that you're starting your ABA courses. And that's what's required in order to start supervision, is to be within an ABA course and have started that coursework specifically. Mm-hmm.
And it was disclosed to you that she had, in fact, started that coursework, or you were able to surmise from that screenshot that said second week that she was indeed enrolled in those programs?
Yeah, it's my understanding that she wouldn't have access to something like that unless she was in the course.
I have no further questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Other questions? Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Huff, can you clarify for me, in the logs, it talks about a van ride. Can you explain what a van ride is and the behavior analytic aspects of the van ride?
Yeah, so when we would have therapists on the van ride, it was more of like almost a direct session, but mainly like behavioral support. So a lot of our clients would get out of their seats or unbuckle their seatbelts or, you know, engage in unsafe behaviors in the car. And so we had support on the van for those behaviors.
Thank you. And then my other question is related to the unrestricted activities. There's a list of unrestricted activities that are in your contract, some of which are prohibited by the BACB as counting. Are those activities that you are assigning and allowing them to count hours, or just activities that you may assign as part of additional learning?
We have additional learning items outside of the hours that they can count. So we'll do things like, one of the things that she was going to do was like a client rights assignment, and that would have not included that.
But as far as the contract, you guys are including... Oh, you're fine. The Cooper book and the, and the guided notes, because those are also restricted activities, or like not allowed by the BACB.
Yeah, those are monthly activities that they're supposed to turn in just for further education.
Okay. And so do they know, because the contract says they can count 2 hours per activity towards hours. Do they, are the supervisees aware that they have 2 hours to complete it, but they're not able to count those towards their supervised hours? I'm not clear in the contract.
Yeah, that's my understanding, but looking at the contract, that makes sense to change that and modify it. I think there's one portion of the contract that describes also that for conferences, so it's something that I can change.
Thank you. And I didn't know on her log specifically that she had counted any, but she was assigned some, so I just wanted to get clarification there. The other piece of clarification that I was looking at, it looks like you're only having one supervisor sign the contract. However, she was being instructed to report to multiple supervisors for her hours. Can you kind of explain the policy around this and your understanding of the BACB's requirements around the supervision contract?
So we have like a primary supervisor that they're to report to. I always tell them that they can go and do overlaps with multiple supervisors if they want. Chloe was primarily on, or sorry, CA was primarily on all of my cases. So she saw me, but I had always encouraged her to get different insight from others.
Okay. And are you aware that the hours from others would not be able to be counted as per the BACB?
No, because of the way that the multiple supervisor experience logs are, figured that that would be a part of it.
Yeah, I would go in and review the handbook. The supervisor signature attestation is required per supervisor. So any other supervisor participating in supervision does also need to sign that. Or a rendition of, some people have done addendums or other things. So that was one of the other things that I just wanted to note. And it was a short amount of time, and I was just looking at the contract and wanted to note that. My last question is related to, you know, this was an individual who was in an RBT status. And you have mentioned that multiple employees have left. Can you walk me through your process for reporting RBT concerns to the BACB?
If you look directly on the website of the BACB, you cannot report somebody for leaving. And I took a screenshot of this the other day. Because I had somebody else just leave. And so it says on the BACB website that it has to be with some other type of violation, and that the BCBA is the one who is responsible for the case supervision. I would have to look up the exact wording, but the BCBA is responsible for the case supervision, meaning that they are responsible to staff the case again. So in my opinion, there was nothing to report her about outside of that?
I have no further questions at this time.
Any other questions from committee members? Okay, so the committee will now begin deliberation. Please note the deliberation is time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions. From complaints, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. David, would you please begin the deliberation?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. In reviewing the documentation and the discussion here, I am having a difficult time seeing anything that rises to the level of a statute violation. There is a contract in place. There is adequate description of said services, not withholding some of the information that Dr. Davis Wilson pointed out, where there could be some fine tuning. There is information in a field tracker around the supervision that's provided that appears to be at the proper levels, and so that's kind of my thoughts at this particular point.
Other committee members.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I do want to just circle back just in discussion around the RBT and reporting requirements. And I do appreciate that Ms. Huff did go on to the BACB to look for those. I think that there's a difference in articulating, hey, somebody has left for somebody like sent a notice and tomorrow we may not have case coverage, because that kind of taps into other RBT codes around professionalism, around the responsibilities and rights to the clients. And so I think it's probably a slippery slope. I don't know that it's obviously not our jurisdiction. We don't license or certify RBTs. But I would suggest that further review of the RBT ethics code and familiarity with how the code applies, so that can be better articulated when reviewing the BACB tools. Because I do differ in opinion between whether or not these are reportable. Unfortunately, these are things that happen and they go on to work for other organizations and give, a day notice at other organizations. And meanwhile, it's the recipient of the services that are being impacted. The thing about reporting services or reporting isn't a like gotcha, or it should never be retaliatory. It should only, I think that's probably what the BACB is trying to weed through, is like not having all of the like, oh, and then this happened and then this happened, all that noise. But here's the ethics code and here's the violation. Here's how it impacts the member. And if at that point, once it's submitted, the BACB comes back and says, hey, you know what? This is happening all the time. This is what we meant by our website. Please don't report anymore. Cool. But if they don't, and they, even if it's providing education or supporting the RBT through some other practices, I just think it's part of that doing the due diligence to make sure that at the end of the day, the consumer, the individual that's getting the services, are the ones that are not deeply impacted by some of these decisions. I also noted the supervision changes. I do also, want to just make a note for the record and some of the correspondence from Ms. Huff to the supervisee. There was, and it's written language and that makes it very difficult, but there was still some kind of unprofessional tone and snarkiness in some of the emails that I know that before we've had Ms. Huff before us and have had this conversation around. I would just ask again, whether or not that rises to a level of concern. I think it's going to continue to rise to potential risk of ongoing complaints. And so to continue to seek resources, mentorship, and other tools to help around how to appropriately give feedback, talk with supervisees, how to change that written language. And again, I just bring that up again. I don't think it rises to a level, but I do think that it's going to continue to put this licensee at risk of additional complaints at later times.
Thank you, Dr. Davis Olson. Any other comments from committee members? Okay, is there a motion?
I'll go ahead and make. Yes, but go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just ask real quick. It's more of a procedural question. If Ms. Huff makes the changes to her, well, I'll let you make the motion first, and then maybe it'll fall under an amendment.
Yeah, that's fine. I think actually, before we went to a motion, I wanted to just kind of explore a little bit around this RBT, because I think it's important. We've got a lot of people on the call today. I would like to just kind of take a few moments to explore, some of the information around considering for reporting an alleged violation against an RBT, because I, as part of this, I obviously reviewed BACB, kind of the code for the RBTs. There are three sections. You know, I did see the section that talks about acting in the best interest of the client. Obviously, no call, no show, is not in the best interest of the client. And then there's also some additional guidance from the BACB, referred to as considerations for reporting an alleged violation against an RBT. And I think that, as part of this discussion, it is not, I would say, overtly clear that this kind of like abandonment of position is something that the BACB is directly interested in hearing about. And I, to your point, I do think that that's not the greatest look for us, as the individuals that, for whatever reason decide to depart and don't do so in a way that protects client services, then that puts it puts the next agency at risk as this individual moves on, or even as they move on to become a BCBA or a licensed BCBA. But I did, just knowing that you are, full of the information that I think I was looking for, in terms of that documentation, that further documentation from the BACB, was there something in there that that you can kind of hang your hat on as to like, hey, we need to really, make sure that our supervisor is aware of this, make sure that the agencies are aware of this? Or is it more of that just kind of, as you said, like that client safety piece kind of is all encompassing?
Yeah, I think the client safety piece is the part. And I think I do agree that there's context, and organizations and businesses, I think, under best practice can establish policies and procedures. The BACB does say, hey, this ultimately falls on you as the supervisor. But the part that falls on you as the supervisor, in my opinion, is whether or not you feel that this individual has the tools, the resources, the skill set to continue to keep that consumer safe. And so again, if they just jump ship and go to another company, what are you doing, one, to protect your consumers? And two, what is the context around that departure? And, one of the concerns that I consider in wait, and this isn't, it's not a decision maker, it's just one of the considerations, is this somebody that's in supervision, and where in supervision are they? Because it's not just an RBT who just heard about the job on Indeed, came, worked for 2 months, and then said, hey, this isn't for me. That could be a very different, especially if as an employer, I'm seeing we're already having conversations around whether this is a fit or not. Like, there's a lot of different contexts that I think could go into it. I also think that some organizations, especially center-based ones, that can say, hey, we've got immediate coverage for this staff and there's no gap in services. And that's part of my rationale as to why I made the decision not to report. That was what I was looking more for in the answer, as far as when I said, what is your understanding of that reporting and what would you be doing, is looking at what goes into the weight of that. And then again, from there, not leaving it as simply, well, the BACB doesn't want to hear about departures. I agree. But is there components of that code that impact the consumer, or that didn't impact the consumer, that needs to be that potentially looked at? And again, the BACB could decide to do nothing with it. But I still feel that is within our responsibility when we don't have those other pieces, like, hey, this is an individual who got a job off Indeed, fresh out of high school, decided, look, this isn't for me. I'll give you 2 weeks, and then calls the next day and says, you know what, I'm stressed, I can't even give you 2 weeks. Very, very different circumstances. And I think that's what I would be bringing to light.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a fair summary of it. I think that where, you know, as I look at kind of the documentation on the, you know, kind of the supplemental documentation from the BACB, you know, their note at the bottom of page 3, you know, really kind of throws it back at each of us as BCBAs, saying that, you know, we are ultimately, it does say that it's our responsibility of the RBT supervisor or the provider organization to ensure continuity of services. And their final statement, which I think is, you know, up for discussion, is we ask that you do not submit a notice against an RBT for their untimely departure from employment unless you believe you have evidence of a code violation that is not solely based on their departure. And so that does kind of become that question of you as the supervisor of like, hey, yes, they left us in a lurch, you know, not the one that's, you know, not the example you just provided. But if that's all they've done, if there's not something there you can hang your hat on in terms of evidence, it makes it very, you know, clear here that the BACB will not act or is not interested in hearing it unless you've got that other piece there. And so, you know, I think that that's definitely a thank you for the conversation around that and exploring that with me.
And Dr. Dave, if I may, I think that that's exactly what I wanted, was kind of the conversation. I think one of the difficulties that I've brought up, and it'll come up again today, but I've brought up in multiple meetings, is this disconnect between the supervisor and the RBT, especially now Ms. Huff, you know, owns the agency, so that's a little bit different, but especially in these organizations where the RBT seems to already be detached from the supervisor and it falls on the organization. And so those departures and stuff, sometimes the BCBAs don't even understand how impactful their role is because it does fall on them. So when the organizations are doing all the scheduling and canceling sessions and doing all these things, and you know, there's not processes in place for those BCBAs to be able to have feedback in the mechanisms of how the RBTs are worked on, there's this kind of isolation of, well, the BCBA is the BCBA and the RBTs are our employees. And that's not really how the case models look. And we see this when we're speaking to many BCBAs. It's something that we've seen recently, is very much like, oh, no, I just met my responsibilities as a BCBA. And it's like, well, what about the RBT and the technician hours and all of this? And they're like, no, that's the organization. So I think to your exact point, what it falls back on is that BCBA, not necessarily always the case BCBA, but the responsible RBT supervisor or however the organization has it set up. And I think it falls back on being able to articulate how you calibrated the evidence before you against the ethics code and our statute. And I think that that's extremely important because here in Arizona, the regulation of ABA includes RBTs, only RBTs aren't the ones that the complaints would go up against. If a family had a complaint, that's going to the BCBA. And so I think the BCBA is really, and again, given we've got several students on the call and others, given the audience, I think it's very important to start to bridge that disconnect between that BCBA and that RBT and get people thinking about there's not always a black and white answer, but there should always be a decision model in place to support those processes.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. We'll have more philosophical conversations around ethics at a different time. I appreciate it.
Is there a motion then?
I'll go ahead and make a motion that this be dismissed. Make a motion that we make the recommendation to the full board of psychologist examiners that this be dismissed.
Okay. Is there a second?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey and Ms. Galvin, if I may, would it be possible to just ask Ms. Huff to send us an updated copy of what supervision contract she'll be using moving forward based on just our feedback? It's not a mandate, just a courtesy to send it over to board staff.
If she's willing to do that, yes.
Okay. So Ms. Huff, if you wouldn't mind, just want to make sure that that's kind of cleaned up. I would appreciate that. And on that note, I'll second that motion.
Great. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
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 Ms. Rates, I didn't hear you.
Sorry. Aye. Okay.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you.
Mr. Stenhoff, Dr. Stenhoff and the committee, would you care to go into executive session for legal advice?
That would be great, Ms. Galvin.
And I'll second that.
Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor going to executive session, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. I remember we have made a motion and the motion carried for, let's see. What's yeah, for complaint 2318 for Paige Huff. Is that correct?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move on to complaint number 2319, Paige Huff. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on this. I want to note the next four complaints were filed by the same complainant and the allegations may relate to one or more of the respondents. Given this, I'll ask the assigned lead for this case to provide a complaint overview with agenda item 4B. The complainant will have an opportunity with the case to make comments that are specific to that complaint's respondent. The second complaint scheduled for review today is 2319 against Paige Huff. Before we proceed, are there any recusals? Okay, Dr. Rates, you're the assigned lead. Would you please provide an overview?
Yes. So the board received a complaint from EF in October. The complainant EF alleges that there were false billing practices happening at the agency. The complainant also indicated that there were late submission of reports at the agency. And the complainant also alleges that there was inadequate supervision, both of themselves in their role as an RBT, but also inadequate supervision of trainees who were working towards their RBT. As you noted, Mr. Chair, the complainant EF did make a complaint against multiple LBAs within this complaint, and we did receive information from each of them. We received billing logs that show what was billed for and what was not billed for, and the type of activities that were billed versus paid out to employees. We received supervision logs. We also received policies related to supervision practices from the agency. Additionally, they provided information related to feedback that was provided to EF in the form of emails that were given with specific feedback following overlaps. We were also provided with information on how to reach out to individuals within the company should there be a need to elevate a concern. I think that is the high-level overview of what the complaint was, as well as the things that we've received from the licensees.
Thanks, Dr. Rates. All right, so I noted that it appears the complainant EF is present. If so, would you please unmute yourself and state your initials for the record? Again, this is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following the statement. So feel free to unmute and state your name.
Hello, my initials are EF. Do you want me to just, since everything's kind of tied together, just give an overall expectations, or do you want me to like individually, since we're focusing on Ms. Huff right now?
Ms. Galvin, is there a recommendation on that?
I would recommend that she try to focus her comments on the complaint that the board is focusing on right now, the committee.
Right. Okay.
You may have to come back, but
great. Okay, thanks, Ms. Galvin.
Thank you.
So with this, in this company, I was role as the West Valley clinical trainer. And as I was training RBTs and stuff like that, I would get my supervision. And then it was reported to me from some of the RBTs that things within our training, specifically about mandated reporting, was not correct. And that the way that we are teaching it, and a lot of RBTs are taught with no prior experience about mandated reporting as well. And so many of the information that we were taught is the only information that they knew. And so it was relayed that way. A lot of the insurance and things was hearsay. So I understand I don't have the best understanding of that. But I knew from multiple different people within the company said the same thing. And so when I heard that, I just wanted to make sure that it was addressed and acknowledged just in case if something was going on, it was taken care of and handled. But that's pretty much it for this.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's see. Does anybody have any questions for EF?
I can start, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you.
One of my questions is that you shared that you didn't have a lot of information to provide. You had left the agency. Can you share with us what strategies did you take? So you were the trainer of RBTs. You were put in that position. It appears you did sign that position description and you had been in that position. My understanding would be that you were working with the BCBA who was overseeing training and there was some interaction to show that. What steps did you take to share your concerns prior to this complaint that was filed with regard to what you just shared with us, inadequacies in terms of how you were training other RBTs?
Yeah, so during the time, we were actually updating our PowerPoints and everything for training. And so I made the modification. We just have not been using it yet. And then when the RBTs came to me about the mandated reporting thing and about previous cases, I told them to report it. But it got to the point where the cases that were brought to me made me extremely uncomfortable to where I didn't feel comfortable working in that environment, which is why I decided to leave. But I did make it known that like this needs to be addressed to the RBTs themselves. I did not discuss with the BCBAs because they had informed me that they brought it to the BCBAs and was dismissed.
So if I understand correctly, it sounds like you did bring some things to your BCBA training team. They were making those changes and had actually adjusted some of their training. But then new complaints emerged. And so your next step was to resign and then to file this complaint. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And did you have any information provided to you other than just the conversation about any of those things that you've reported to the board in this complaint? Did they share with you billing logs? Did they share with you anything or was it just the conversation?
Just the conversation. That's why I said it was hearsay. It's just when multiple people bring it up, it kind of raises my attention and I wanted to make sure it was addressed.
Okay. I think those are the questions I have for right now. I'll allow other committee members.
Thank you, Dr. Reitz. Other committee members?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Dr. Davey.
Just a question of clarification around the mandatory reporting training. Can you clarify as to what you believe the deficiencies are there?
So the previous training, in which I had also been implementing as well and did not have prior knowledge on, was to report to the BCBAs and or to the clinical directors, and they will handle the situation and they will do their own investigation, not to report to I think it's DPS or whatever, and that you as an RBT are the mandated reporter and that you are to make the report, not report to the BCBA and make it their decision to make that report.
I'm sorry, I'm not fully following there. So with regard to a mandatory reporting, are you speaking of mandatory reporting with regard to an ethical concern with
client safety
or to client safety? So if it's a client safety mandated reporting, that would go to, you said that would go to the BCBA and then they would decide whether or not to turn that over to the BACB?
No. So the way they taught it at Adventure was that if you were noticing something, say a child was coming in with the same pair of clothes every day, you are to bring that up to the BCBA on the case. You are not to, you know, make a report to the Department of Child Safety yourself. Whereas since you are the one experiencing it, mandated reporting laws do require that since you are the witness, you are to be the one to report it.
And was this training something that was constructed by a previous staff to you and then was essentially PowerPoint training, or is this something that's housed inside of the HRIS system?
It was PowerPoints created by previous employees.
And then your job as the trainer, just some understanding, your job was not to update those or to look at those and provide feedback, or when you provided feedback, what was the reaction to that?
So we were in the process of updating them, but we were not allowed to implement the updates until we had completed the previous or like the whole update. And so we were still utilizing the previous one.
Thank you.
Dr. Reitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a follow-up question, and I just would like some clarity and your understanding of what you just shared. Is it your understanding that you were not allowed to move forward if you saw something, or was it your understanding that it was highly recommended that you coordinate with your BCBA?
It was under the understanding that you need to wait for the BCBA to give the clear and make clarification of if this is something worth investigating or if it's, you know, something that's being blown out of proportion.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you. EF, can you explain for me, you were an assistant trainer. Can you explain kind of what your training to become a trainer looked like?
My training to become a trainer, I shadowed the previous trainer for about a week or two. And then I immediately started training on my own with supervision from their chief of training, which at the time was a trainee still waiting for or working towards their BCBA.
And were you, was there any documentation that you're aware of that indicated whether it was tests or a competency score or anything, observation notes that indicated that you had met competency in the trainings?
To my understanding, I met weekly with the chief of training at the time. And they would just be like, okay, from what we've seen, this is what you need to work on, but this is what you're doing amazing. And then to the point where I no longer needed that.
And do you, from your perspective, do you know who the chief of training reported to?
Like
the supervisor was. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I'd like to give the first CE code word.
Thanks, Ms. Michelson.
Yes. For those in attendance, the first code word is April Fools. Again, that code word is April Fools.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have further questions?
I do not at this time.
Okay. Other committee members? Okay. Ms. Hove, as before, please unmute yourself and state your full name for the record. And again, your brief statement can be up to 5 minutes, and the committee members may have follow-up questions for you.
Perfect. My name is Paige Hove. To start with it, I am just pulling up everything, but so I want to kind of just go over how our training team works. We have assistant trainers who help at each clinic who present the PowerPoints that were made by me along with other employees that we all kind of got together and make. We have the chief of training who I just like kind of allow as supervision under me to just really... They're passionate about getting people trained in the field, so they work on the trainings for me when we come up with ideas and then we get it approved. They help with supervision, but like for their unrestricted hours, as well as I do my own supervision, as well as other LBAs, which you, I submitted logs for all of Erin's supervision that she received from BCBA LBAs. For the mandated reporting, it is actually encouraged that they just reach to the supervisor to do it with us if they want to. They're always allowed to report themselves. A lot of people bring things to us because we have clients who may not have, you know, who parents may have like their own interventions or situations going on, and that the BCBA, we just explained that they typically are working on things or some other type of aspects if there is things. So just to reach out to us. So like, let's say a kiddo hasn't been coming in with diapers, and you know, we may know that they get diapers through DDD. And so we provide some diapers instead during that time while we're waiting for mail to come in or whatever. So like some of those situations are just, that's what we encourage. I'm highly open to taking any feedback if that's different. But as Aaron said, we had already changed it to the mandating reporting.
Ms. Huff, may I interrupt you really quick?
Sorry.
If you could refer to the complaint as EF, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, I apologize. EF had mentioned we had already been in the process of changing it. It was something that was brought up. There was other things that just EF had mentioned, as well as other people in the past, that needed to be changed and modified. Those trainings are all in effect now, as well as, you know, updating the ethical codes as we continuously review things, and the BACB reviews things. We continuously update and modify our PowerPoints. It just so happened that during that time, that was like a really big change through all of our training to make it better. And we were spreading out the ethics throughout the entire training, which made it a hefty change versus it just being one PowerPoint. As far as competence, when it came to training, we had our supervisor feedback scores, which I had sent over to you when it came to sessions. And so for sessions, we observed and watched, but not only that, EF had been somebody who had had shadows in sessions, you know, like overlaps or whatever the company would want to call it, where they're observed by BCBA also at the same time to determine if they are explaining the material right, as well as a competency. We call it a senior therapist competency that goes through terms, and they have to pass that as well. And then they have to maintain their scores and keep their scores, as well as getting feedback throughout the training from either the chief of training or myself, and throughout their time still as they provide direct sessions as well. So still maintaining that supervision for direct sessions as well.
Okay, thank you. Do any committee members have questions for Ms. Huff? Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yes, thank you. And thank you again for being here, Ms. Huff. Can you kind of walk us through, you developed the mandatory training PowerPoints or supervised the development of them. Can you kind of walk us through your training and experience on that topic?
I have continuously done, like, I wouldn't say it's something that's like frequently brought up in CEUs or stuff, but like things along those natures about, like some things that I just am curious on, because we work with a lot of access providers, like what do we do in situations where families might not have the means for everything, all of that. But my biggest mandated for training has been throughout my time in my, with, my previous mentor, and then as well as just my own RBT training.
Thank you. You've mentioned a couple of times that the perspective of requesting the supervisor involvement is contextual, because we do work with populations where resources, cultural variations, there could be other context and variables there. And I first, before I ask my question, I want to thank you for bringing it in that light, because I do think that that's a common thing that we see, is that the concerns that someone may have may be biased by their own upbringing or their own, you know, what have you. And then, you know, we're working with families who may have different needs. So I appreciate you keeping that at the forefront. I guess my question to that then would be, what documentation procedures do you guys have when someone brings that concern? And how do you ensure that it's documented appropriately in such a way that we, you know, if an employee were to later, you know, come to us, or if we were to ask and say, hey, you know, show us your incidents and incident reports, and what are you working on? What is your process around that?
Yeah, so we have a couple of varying ones based off of the situation. So like, let's say somebody brought a concern to me that a client A keeps coming with like a lot of, oh, I'm so sorry, these motion lights, a lot of like candy or something like that. Then I put it in, we have a box, like a box shared folder that has all the clients in there. So we would first document that, put that in there. Additionally, it would go to the BCBA. It would go to the BCBA, and let's say Blue would go and take it to parent training, and it might become a parent training goal. If it was things like staying closed multiple days, you know, we might just inform parents, put it in the box. But if it continuously started happening, that's where we can look back and really easily see like, okay, this has been happening for a couple months. Like, we need to do something further about it, and then report it in that sense. Our theory or thoughts are just that the RBT shouldn't go at it alone either with something like mandated reporting, and to protect them from any retaliation that might occur if something were to be said to the family.
So if I were to come to you, say I'm a supervisee, and I come to you and I say, hey, per company policy, I'm coming to you with these concerns. I'm really concerned. I really think this needs to be reported. Kind of role play. Give me, what does your typical discussion back look like?
Yeah. So I would definitely look in the client's folder, especially because if there was anything else that even remotely came to it, I would also want to be there to help kind of support the documentation that would be mandated, like would be reported. If it was a really big concern, I would tell them that they can report it themselves. If it was something that like we are working on or we have had knowledge on that, like let's say it's a parent goal in their report, I would inform them of what we are working on and that they're still able to report it, and I would help them throughout it.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, I have one follow-up question. You did share with us in some of your documentation reference to incident reports. You've just shared that now a moment ago. When how do you train on incident reports, and where do incident reports go within your organization? How are they handled?
Yeah, so we have incident reports that are actually like automated now, so the therapist can do it on their iPads while they're inside of a session or outside of it. It goes and it's uploaded into a Slack channel that all of the supervisors can see, and whoever the supervisor is can grab it, open it up, look at any pictures or references that might be there, and then it's documented and automatically put into the client's file to show that. If it's like a kid got scratched or hurt, we have scheduling or whoever just reach out to the parents and let them know. If it's a therapist, you know, who might have gotten bit, we send them to get a tetanus shot if there's open wounds. So we have it pretty automated. I know that when EF was specifically there, I don't know if it was specifically automated yet, and it used to be a paper form that would be submitted to a supervisor. And on the form, it literally states like supervisor, which supervisor did you tell, and like, when did you tell them?
Thank you. And at what point, as someone joins your organization, do you review that process with them?
Throughout all of training, it's one of the very first days, but it's something that's continuously done. We have them report even things that might have, like the other day we had a client with just like a red eye, like there's nothing we can really do, but we have them report any instances or any strange things like that. And so it's just a constant training and follow-up and feedback on incident reports throughout the time as well.
So to your knowledge, EF shared that there had been some concerns. To your knowledge, were those concerns reported to anyone prior to receiving this complaint?
Yeah, and they were all addressed. EF was not on any of the cases, and the RBT who brought it to them was their roommate. So it wasn't something that necessarily I felt was important to share with EF.
Dr. Ritz, any further questions? Okay. Questions from other committee members?
May I clarify something?
Dr. Davis-Wilson, are you okay if EF speaks, or would you like to ask a question first?
I'm okay with it, but then I think we'll just proceed with questioning Ms. Huff, and then if there's additional questions, we can refer it back, but we'll go ahead and do it this one time.
Okay. All right. EF?
Yes. So there were multiple reports to me. The one involving Paige Huff was from my roommate, but there were multiple reports about mandated reporting that was reported to me.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Thank you. Do you guys have, and I remember having a conversation around accreditation or facility licensure. Have you guys completed those processes yet, either one of them, the accreditation or seeking facility licensure?
Nope, we are currently in the process with BHCOE.
Okay. And in that process, or now, have you guys, do you guys have a policy handbook around HIPAA compliance, storage of records, and kind of how client information is shared amongst two?
Yeah, we actually have with our HIPAA training, we have a HIPAA whole training like software that we utilize and team. So we have, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but it is a HIPAA training that provides, and we have staff meetings on HIPAA training every 6 months. And then outside of that, are able to utilize it with like reference to like communicating with them and get ideas from them. And then outside of that, we've made all of our policies and stuff based off of their advice and training.
And as far as the handling of records goes, would you say that it would be fair that an assistant trainer may have knowledge of a client or an employee based on their role in RBT renewal support, RBT annual support? So it's not like this is a role of somebody who just does direct therapy and would never have oversight of any other or hands on any other case.
Yeah, and I would say for the case that they're specific, or the cases they're specifically involved in. So like a lot of our clients in the clinic, they don't necessarily have access, because we can limit that access. So they won't have access to everything, but maybe some of it, they'll have access to their data books, which has their getting to know you and programs and goals and information like that. The specific cases that are mentioned, we're not a part of that clinic.
And I think that brings me to my next question then, as far as, and this is, I'll preface this with, I don't have an answer. I'm just curious as to what yours is. we have a lot of discussions around multiple relationships, and the engagement of multiple relationships is clearly defined in the BACB code of conduct, but also the RBT code of conduct. As far as hiring processes, or maybe lessons learned or things that you might be considering, have you put any thought into, the potential conflict of having roommates, siblings, family members, what have you, involved or both employed at the same place where they might be collegial in some aspect, And yeah, I'd like to hear kind of what those lessons are, and if anything, what you have or will be putting into place to mitigate that, because there's, you know, it's very difficult to tell employees like, hey, you can't discuss your concerns outside of work with others. I mean, it's the HIPAA stuff aside, yes, but how have you, or have you thought about how you would mitigate kind of those multiple relationships that seem to be kind of a theme that's arising?
Yeah. So a lot of them is like, we have two different clinics and locations, which we do have like referral programs and stuff. So we tend to separate them based off of that. Now, EF and their roommate ended up moving throughout the company. And I think that's something that I do need to address and looking into further, is like, when you do move up, and you're, you know, some of their roommate who was in supervision, how do we work on them who might be going between clinics, not having that type of information, either stationing them at one or not even allowing it any further. Okay. They were roommates after they were hired. So they were hired completely separate and then became roommates.
That's a great clarification. Do you have any policies in your employee handbook that talk to that potential of a change in relationship with another employee?
No, that's something that we should add.
Yeah, and just a side note, I would encourage keeping in mind the role we have as BCBAs and trainers in autonomy, and not, you know, when you focus on policies, not making it to making the policy to where you're having to, you know, micromanage it, but thinking of you know, looking more at how do you create an environment where there is self-disclosure, where there is, you know, it goes back to the ethics code around creating that ethical environment. How do we make it so that we have those? And then how do you continue to support employees so that they can grow within the organization, but also know how to set boundaries? I bring that up because I think the boundaries and the multiple relationships thing is going to be a theme. I have no further questions.
Yeah,
sorry. Go ahead, Miss F. I did not mean to cut you off. Go right ahead.
No, you're totally good. I wanted to point out that we do have it for like relationships, but not necessarily roommates. I just wanted to clarify that. Like, if somebody starts dating, we have it, but not if it's like, oh, well, we're going to be roommates now. I do know that we met with her and the roommate beforehand, but I think that more separation would be needed.
Well, and I do want to, again, clarify, like, this is an area, like, I don't know that outwardly I would have immediately thought of, but I do work with many university students who are all in the same program together. So they may be living together, sharing resources or what have you. So I by no means want it to sound like restricting or prohibiting that would be the answer, because I don't think that's the answer. But I do think that, back to, you know, the original piece, we are responsible at the end of the day, you know, for the provision of the services and what have you. And so it's just very important that we're continuing to have processes in place to kind of stop check that and make sure that there isn't conflict.
Yeah.
All right. Any other discussion? Okay. So is there well, let's move on to deliberation. We'll note that deliberation is a time for us to discuss, or the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Rates, would you begin the deliberation?
I actually would like to make a motion to go to executive session.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
And that's for the purpose of receiving legal advice?
Yes. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Just a reminder to the attendees, we are moving into deliberation, and it's a time for the committee members to discuss without any interruptions. Dr. Rates, please Please begin.
I appreciate the, I want to just start by saying I appreciate all the information that was submitted by Ms. Huff. Thank you for doing that. I think the challenging space for me is that it sounds as if, one of the main areas we talked about was this mandated reporting. The complainant shared their sort of feeling that that needed to be updated, that there wasn't a great mechanism. Ms. Huff, you've shared that you did have some policies in place related to how to report. It sounds like there were some changes being made. We haven't seen those changes yet, but I appreciate that you were working on making some adjustments to that. So for me, that space is still a little bit of a concern, just in terms of ensuring that your employees know that they have an ability to make sure their concerns are able to be shared and that they are able to report when they have concerns about the clients that they serve. So that space, I think, is a space where there are some policies in place, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. I think it is a space where some additional resources should be allocated to ensure that every employee feels they have a way to share those concerns and address those concerns in a meaningful way. In terms of the training for new RBTs, again, I think ensuring that as you're moving people forward, you have good mechanisms in place, that they have access to their trainings, they have access to their competencies, they have access to the reports that you have that indicate that they are ready for a particular position and that their expectation is very clear as they move forward in that position, and also who will be supervising them and what that supervision looks like. I think just ensuring additional clarity would be very important and an area to consider here. But I'm eager to hear more from my colleagues as well.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Rates, I do agree with your sentiments. I think the only addition that I would add is the scope of practice around being qualified to develop or oversee the development of such a critical training. And I think that, that one in particular does tie into the legal side. I don't know if people are aware of it, but DCS, well, I know Dr. Davies, DCS will come out and provide you a training and review some of your materials or provide you materials. And I know it was very impactful for me when we had DCS come out. They sent some representatives out to the organization I was working with to answer the technicians' questions, to answer. So it was not coming from myself as a position of authority. And there's a lot of things, little things that we do that inadvertently kind of display power and clout and authority. One small example is in the employee handbook where it talks about incident reports. Directly underneath it, it talks about promotions. So we may not think of these things like when you read it, it's like, okay, yeah, they're covering it. But then when you think about the amount of clout that goes into following what my supervisor suggests, even if it's a suggestion, unless you're clearly able to articulate, I'm making the suggestion and here's why I'm not reporting. If you would like additional information on these pieces, here's how we can support that. But at the end of the day, the decision to report is on you. And I do agree that supportive, I've had parents show up at my door my office saying, hey, DCS was called and I know it was one of your employees and I wish you would have just talked to us. So I do know the hardship that can bring to families. I do know the kind of rapport it can damage, but at the end of the day, it's not our, you know, we have to be very careful on how we influence that. And I think it starts with training that is competent and relays the appropriate scope of practice, and includes DCS, DCS materials, and perhaps DCS staff on some of those pieces. And not all works that way, but I still think it goes even at just the simplest to a scope of practice issue. And Dr. Reitz, I was going to ask for a copy of the training, but I appreciate Ms. Huff for being very transparent, because I don't think we need to see the training. I think her disclosure of her prior history with regards to the material, I think, is sufficient enough for me.
Other committee members. Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I also wanted to just bring forth my concerns around documentation, and specifically around documenting the eventual outcomes of things, and kind of seeing things through. So there seems to be the incident report piece, but not necessarily the action plan, the outcomes, the follow through. And if it's there, then perhaps the solution is that it's, you know, we're provided copies of those records. Maybe it wasn't clear that those would be good records to provide. But we have very, very clear across multiple ethics codes that very clearly says that we're not just documenting, but we're documenting all actions and we're documenting all outcomes. And so I, that would be my only other concern. And if I needed to cite a code, it would probably be around 2.19, addressing conditions interfering with service delivery, which again, clearly articulates the behavior analyst must document all conditions, all actions taken, and the outcomes.
Thank you.
And I'll add to that my concerns around, you know, there seems to be, sorry, I keep adding, there seems to be a theme kind of immediately kind of getting defensive with the complainant as opposed to that initial kind of self-reflection. I do think that we have an obligation to kind of self-reflect on, hey, why is this person bringing this forth and what can I do with that? And obviously within the rights of responding to the complaint, you're going to respond with facts. But, you know, when it comes to, well, and then there were HIPAA violations and then there was this, and then there was this, it kind of almost starts to allude to, well, then what are the policies around that? You've got a trainer who may have knowledge of an individual. Now, when they bring forth their concerns, it's immediately met with, well, that's a HIPAA violation. Well, if there was a HIPAA violation, where was the documentation? Where was the outcomes? Where was the action plan at that time? You know, those sorts of things. So it still goes back to kind of the process of things. But I think that it's coming to light because of that immediate kind of defensiveness to, well, here's the other side. And don't get me wrong. Most definitely there are, you know, two sides, three sides usually to every story. But I think that it's lending to, like, I think what the code speaks to as far as documentation is that's what clearly sets the stage and not, you know, so whether it's performance issues with the technician, like we shouldn't be hearing about these after the departure. There should already be things in place prior to that point that says we talked about this, we did this, you know, there was a potential HIPAA breach, you know, and so I documented it this way and here were the actions that we took. And I'm not seeing that. So I think procedurally and process for safeguards are a concern of mine. And again, I do want to say that some of these things in requesting records just may be present in evidence. So if that were to be the case, I would be open to requesting additional records for review.
All right, thank you. Any other any other comments from committee members? Okay, Dr. Rates, would you like to make a motion at this time or take some other course of action at this moment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually would like to request that we hold on making a decision until we are able to review each of these cases as they are, as they were submitted together, and then make a final decision after we have a chance to review and deliberate.
Okay, thank you. And then I'm also noting the time. We have been at an hour and a half. Would anybody like a comfort break?
I would love one, please.
I'm seeing some head nods. So yes, let's take a moment and we'll reconvene at, let's say 12:35. So we'll say at 12:45, we will reconvene. Yeah. All right. All right. We're moving on to the third complaint. Is number 23-21 against Abigail Barnes. Let's see, are there any recusals from this present members? Okay. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on this. And you previously provided an overview of this case, but if you have any additional information to provide that's specific to this respondent, please do so at this time.
I don't believe there's anything new other than, you know, I think we did receive a response from Ms. Barnes related to this complaint. She did share information with us related to supervision practices and the timing of when she received her VCBA licensure here for the state, as well as her certification. She also shared RBT supervision logs. And policies for the company related to supervision. So thank you for submitting those.
All right, thank you, Dr. Rates. EF, like before, go ahead and unmute yourself, state only your initials for the record. You'll have the opportunity to make a brief up to a five minute statement. And like before, the committee members might have additional questions for you.
My initials are EF. The complaint towards Ms. Barnes also includes Mr. Huff with the fact that I was being supervised for my RBT hours by Ms. Barnes for client NH. And I received a feedback email and everything like that. I added that to my RBT supervision logs. And then I noticed on Catalyst that there was a note done by NH's BCBA, which was Dylan Huff. But I was not supervised by Dylan Huff at that time. I was being supervised by Abby Barnes. And I did not make a note of it. And when I asked my mentor, which is a program that they do, they said that potentially Ms. Barnes did not have her LBA. And so I couldn't track that as my supervision hours. But when I asked if I could, I was told that I could be tracked as my supervision hours, which I then dismissed it. But then during another jobs training for RBT, it was mentioned in that stating that you cannot be supervised by one BCBA, but client modifications being entered by another BCBA. So I just wanted to make sure that it was reported and addressed if it was an issue.
All right, thank you. Do committee members have any questions for EF?
I can start. So if I can just clarify what you shared, it sounds like you had concerns that you were being supervised by Ms. Barnes prior to her having her being licensed with the state. Is that correct?
Yes. And then when I received clarification on that, I understood more so. I'm looking for answers or justification, or if this is an issue, a solution towards why I was being supervised and counting RBT hours while client modification was being done by a completely different BCBA for the same time that I was supervised.
So I'm going to start with the first part of that, which is just in relation to her licensure and the timing. Did you ever bring this to Ms. Barnes as a concern?
I did not. I had asked another BCBA who was the clinical director at the time, and they said that it was supervision hours and that she had her LBA and such.
Okay. So from the information that we received, it does appear that the time with which you were supervised by Ms. Barnes, she was licensed by the state. Then to your other, so I think that issue is resolved in terms of the documentation that we received. I would just make a note that I find it curious that you didn't go directly to her if she was supervising you on a case and ask her that question yourself. And so in the future, I would just encourage you to ask those questions with individuals if you have them. They're important questions, but they may be able to share information with you and help you as you are learning more about this field and moving forward in this field related to the different requirements for different positions, supervision structure, licensing, and credentialing requirements. So then if you can just walk me through again, your second concern was that.
So during the client in H, I was being supervised by Ms. Barnes and was receiving my hours. And then through Catalyst, which is the data collection app that they use for their programs, there was a BCBA note stating that Dylan Huff made program modifications based off of watching RBT and basically billed for that time. Although it was not him.
So it's your understanding that he did not ever engage with this client at any point in time?
During that time when I was supervised, he had made a note for that day for the times that she supervised me, stating that he was there supervising me and made program modifications off of that time.
Okay, thank you for that clarity. Mm-hmm. I think I'll hold any additional questions and let Dr. Davis Wilson.
Thank you, Dr. Reitz. I think I was also seeking similar clarity. For what you noted in the system, was the session note signed off on by Mr. Huff?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so it would have, based on your understanding of the system, it would have had to have been Mr. Huff that went in and signed it, or somebody using his unique login, because it wasn't something that he signed off on. So for example, if, sometimes there's two signature spots and sometimes there's somebody signing off on something that somebody else did, but it has the appearance that he was not present, but wrote the note.
Yes. So the note was stated that it was direct supervision for me, and it was only signed by Dylan Huff.
Okay.
Okay. Other questions?
Mr. Chair, just one question. On the, you mentioned that it said, again, I'm asking you to recall something. I know you don't have the screenshots of this, so I'm a little uneasy with this what do you remember kind of thing from seeing something several months ago. But I'm going to ask anyways, when you saw the note, was there a particular service code that was associated with that note?
I know there was a billable code for BCBAs. I don't know the difference. I just know on Catalyst, when you go to write a note, they have BT note, RBT note, and then BCBA note at that time. And so it was under the BCBA note.
Tell me more about how you know the selection of that note is billable.
So when you are on Catalyst and you review the notes, you'll get access to all the notes for anyone who puts it. And so I saw it was billed and it says billable hours or billable code, and then it has the code, and then it says the note, and then it has the signature.
So I'm just trying to connect the dots here. So does, in your mind, is billable code equal to something that is then ultimately billed to a funder?
That is my understanding, yes. And with the program modifications, with a note saying that BCBA supervised RBT and made program modifications off of that, It did not make sense to me when I was not being the one directly supervised by that BCBA.
Thank you.
Any other questions at this time? All right. I know Ms. Barnes is present. Ms. Barnes, are you represented by an attorney today?
No.
Okay. Please state your full name for the record. And again, this is an opportunity for you to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. And we may have further questions for you.
Thank you. My name is Abigail Barnes. I'll just give a quick overview. When I got my BCBA certification in June 2021, before I was licensed in the state of Arizona in July 2021, I assisted on cases with Paige and Dylan Huff, who were both state-licensed BCBAs. I practiced supervising and was asked to practice writing soap notes and email to them. I was not billing for clients. On my response, I mentioned that I was listed as EF's BCBA supervisor for her RBT credentials starting in the following year, March 2022.
Ms. Barnes, is that the end of your statement?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. All right. committee members, does anybody have any questions for Ms. Barnes?
I guess I would just ask if you can provide us with any insight or information related to the allegations that another BCBA was inaccurately coding and billing time under a case that you were supervising.
So Dylan Huff was previously my BCBA for doing my supervision to sit for my BCBA exam. So when I got my BCBA, before I got my state license, I was still working with him, still being supervised until after I got my state license, since you do have to have your state license to practice in the state of Arizona. So he was very, just very consistent and mindful of that. And he did supervise me. We would supervise together. I am no longer with the company, so I do not have, the insider, like the dates of everything that would be in their systems. But like I said, I did practice writing soap notes for when I was supervising. I was not submitting them. I was not billing them. They were for practice, and I would get feedback on them, and I would email them to Paige and Dylan for some feedback. From what I am aware of, nobody was billing as me or for my supervision, from what I know of.
That was going to be my next question, so thank you. So what I hear you saying is while you were still with the company, after you were licensed, as far as you're aware, you never experienced identifying a time where a case that you were working on was overseen by another BCBA without your knowledge, or that they were seeing one of your clients or providing treatment for one of your clients. That was not something that you're aware of while you were there. Thank you.
Other questions for Ms. Barnes?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Dr. Davey.
Ms. Barnes, in your time at the agency, are you aware of any practices that, with regard to billing and services, that you had concerns about? For example, billing for supervision of technicians without a patient present, other issues that rose to around perhaps 97155 or other codes that you were uncomfortable with or uneasy with as not only a certified behavior analyst, but also as a licensed behavior analyst?
No, not that I'm aware of. When I got my BCBA and my LBA, I was given an overview of billable codes, and from what I understand, from what I've read on billable codes in other places, it was all accurate what I was taught there and what other people were abiding by, from what I know and from what I was aware of at the time.
And from your time working there and being inside of the EHR system, it sounds as if that was central reach, and looking at services that you were providing, putting through your own notes, even when they were practice notes versus then when you became a licensed behavior analyst. Did you notice any strange discrepancies or anything that seemed to raise any red flags with regard to billing practices when you were inside of the central reach system?
No, I did not see any.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Davis Wilson.
Thank you, Ms. Barnes, for being here. Were you credentialed with any health plans after you were licensed under Adventure?
Sorry. So we worked on with our billing person, and Paige and Dylan helped walk me through the application process for all insurances. So I was applying to all those, and then one at a time I was getting approved. So by the time that I left Adventure EBA a few months ago, as of February 2022, I was credentialed with all insurance plans that we used at that company. So I did slowly get accepted to more and more as the applications went through.
And as you were credentialed, is that when you were taking on cases, or were you still doing the RBT supervision?
No, I was taking cases when I was credentialed. Like I mentioned, or Dylan would stay on a case with me until I was able to bill for that case and fully take on the whole case with RBT supervision, billing for supervision and doing every part of the full job of being a BCBA on a case.
And for those cases, your time was considered non-billable and the company was just absorbing that cost?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to interrupt and give the second CE code word. For those in attendance, the code word is SPRING. Again, that is SPRING. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Bakerson. Okay, further questions? Okay. The committee will now begin deliberation. Again, this is a time for the committee to discuss this among themselves without interruptions. Dr. Rates, would you please begin the deliberations?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of this particular complaint, I think from what's been presented today and what I've seen, this seems to be a bit of a misunderstanding in terms of how supervision and licensure and credentialing works. I again would encourage anyone and everyone to have direct conversations when these things come up. Ask these questions directly so you can be very clear about who is supervising you, what their role is, and ensure that they are meeting all of the qualifications required. For me at this point, in terms of what we've heard today, I'm not seeing that Ms. Barnes, it seems she was licensed when she was supervising EF, and so those hours would not have been an issue for EF, and it appears she was getting adequate supervision, was not taking on cases prior to her credentialing and her licensing.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Rates. Dr. Davis Wilson.
I just wanted to clarify, Dr. Rates, if you're, because I know we are looking at each one of these individually. And so for me, I tend to agree as this pertains to Ms. Barnes. However, I think some of the information presented today still would warrant further review from the perspective of Mr. Huff and the billing, when we've got someone saying that the individual was not physically present to be able to bill that code. So I just wanted to make sure that I understood that and clarified it.
Yes, I would agree. I'm just referring to the complaints that were with Ms. Barnes.
Okay. And I would agree with that. I think that as far as, she was licensed, she went through the credentialing, she is attesting to have been supervised until the licensure. She was unaware of any billing that would have been happening. She was just told it's not billable, so send your notes via email so we can give you feedback on them type thing. So there's a few things that for me just don't quite add up, but I can't put my finger quite on it. And so, I mean, hopefully Dr. Davey, we seem to be driving a little bit today. Maybe you can help me with that.
I don't know that I can, but I think Chairman Stenhoff, if I may, I would like to just ask, one other clarifying question of Ms. Barnes, just for the committee's sake, if that's acceptable to you.
Yes.
Well, it needs to be acceptable to the chair. Thank you, Ms. Barnes.
Please proceed, Dr. Davey.
So Ms. Barnes, in terms of when you were working with clients, were there times where Mr. Huff overlapped with you in terms of the services, like physically overlapped with you, was physically present while you provided services or oversaw services being provided by an RBT?
Yes, that happened multiple times. That happened a minimum, I believe we did at least once a month of overlaps until I was credentialed with the state and also with the insurance.
Thank you. In terms of clarification, I'm not sure I can connect all the dots yet. I think that I echo what Dr. Rates has said and Dr. Davis-Wilson with regard to, in this case, I see no particular issues with anything Ms. Barnes was engaged in, and she has full ability to practice within the state within her license and being credentialed. And when those were not in place, she was receiving supervision from a licensed individual. So I think that, at this point, I think we probably continue through the other complaints and see what else is there. And then maybe we can articulate something, Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Dr. Davey, committee members, I agree with that too. I don't see much right now, but I'd like to move on to the next committee members, or not committee members, but to the next complaints, if everybody's okay with that. Okay, so let's move on to complaint. Let me get to it. Complaint number 23-22, Diamond Smith, is our fourth complaint. Are there any recusals? Any committee members at this time? Okay. And then Dr. Rich, you've provided an overview of this case, but is there anything additional that you would like to add at this point?
I don't think anything additional is needed. Again, we did receive a response from the licensee and fairly similarly explaining their supervision structure, supervision logs, as well as information related to the training that's received for the trainer and those that are working with new RBT trainees.
Okay. All right, great. Thank you. EF, again, would you just state your name for the record? You have an opportunity to make up to a 5-minute statement. And then again, we may have further questions for you.
My initials are EF. With this, it's very similar to the previous situation where within the training, we talked about the mandated reporting and everything like that. A RBT had brought a complaint to my attention with a specific client, YR, stating that they went to Diamond Smith, who was also our clinical director at the time, and brought up a situation and asked for advice on what they should do. And then with that advice, they came to me and felt that they were being dismissed and wasn't sure about the mandated reporting because, as I previously stated, it was taught to go to the supervisor, not to report yourself, or that was the understanding of it. And so they weren't sure what to do, which is where we further researched and found out they need to report themselves.
All right. Okay, thank you. And then let's see, Ms. Smith, are you present today?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so would you please state your full name for the record? And again, this is your opportunity to make up to a brief 5-minute statement. And committee members may have questions for you as well.
Point of order, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Dr. Davey, I'm sorry. Yeah, do you have questions for EF?
I do.
Okay, Ms. Smith, we're going to wait just a moment for you to start while the committee members ask questions of EF. Thank you, Dr. Davey.
So, EF, thank you again. So my question is regard to the issue that is brought forth by, you know, in your statements here today. There's an issue that a staff member, an RBT, is concerned about. This issue then is elevated. RBT is not satisfied with how Mr. Smith addresses the issue, comes back to let you know of their displeasure around this. What is then what do you do next?
So within the company, they have this saying to go up, not out, which is why they want you to go to the BCBAs, and you know they have the trainer in place for people to go to who are above, so that way they don't gossip or anything like that. When the person went to me, they felt that when they had gone to the appropriate person in the situation, that the situation was not handled correctly. And with things going on within the company because of the seriousness of the situation, they were concerned for the clients. And so they asked me if I knew anything because of me being a trainer, of things that they could do, which is how we found out that mandated reporting is required by the RBT to be the person to report it, since they are the witness.
And the RBT that brought this to your attention, is this someone that was only known to you as a colleague in terms of an employee, or was this someone that you had a potential dual relationship with?
Only a colleague. I never saw them outside of work at all.
And then my next question is, you allude to this situation being, you know, serious. What was the alleged concern, or what was the concern by the staff?
The current concern by the staff was brought by a parent that the parent of YR said that the client was being sexually assaulted by another BT. And did not feel comfortable having their clients in services, and that they'll be doing their own investigative work and whatnot on their end. And then they pulled their children from services. And so the RBT brought this to Miss Diamond Smith and was like, hey, this is what mom told me. And she felt that in that conversation, that situation was not being addressed, and that instead was being dismissed.
Thank you. And I think I might have misspoken, referred to Ms. Diamond as Mr. Diamond. I apologize, Ms. Diamond, for that. Thank you, Dr. Stainless.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
To your knowledge, EF, are you aware of any grievance policies within the organizations for employees or families, so that if they do bring you a concern, you are able to provide to them like, hey, here is the policy, or here's an email, or here's the contact. Are you aware of what a grievance policy for employee and client is? And if so, were you able to share that to those you were speaking to?
No, to my knowledge, they just tell you to go to a person that you feel comfortable with, and to vent to them. And that is how the situation, and on the client end, I have no knowledge.
And to your knowledge, there's not a like process for being able to file a complaint?
No.
Internally within the organization. Thank you.
Dr. Davey.
Just one follow-up question. Was in your position as a trainer, when there were complaints made, let's just say to upper management or to BCBAs and above, were there other times you were brought into the loop with regard to the outcomes of those complaints? Was there an expectation that you should be informed outside of what the BCBA or the leadership group had decided to do with a complaint?
So in typical situations, I was only involved if it included a new hire or if the information was brought to me originally. And then if it's outside of my competence, then I would bring it up to someone above me and they handle the situation, but I'm still kept in the loop since I was already originally inside the loop. Hmm.
But in this particular case, you were not kept inside the loop?
No.
And so my question and kind of to you is then, as you look at these situations, the ones that you're kept in the loop, not kept in the loop, are there specifics that, as you kind of look at them, are there times where, you clearly are excluded from the conversation versus times where you are clearly included in the conversation?
I would say it depends on the situation. Many of times I would not be included in the situation until I would be needed to, and then I would be given like a summary of the situation and then addressed then. But typically if it did not involve me, I would have no knowledge.
So I guess what I'm asking is in your position, as part of your job description, I've kind of looked at some of that, like, is there this expectation that you should be kept in the loop? I didn't identify that in the job description, particularly that as a trainer. I could see if you were an interested party in this being kept in the loop. But I think I'm just struggling with, where that intersection is that, sometimes there's confidential information around employees, around clients that, sometimes that the information is taken in and it's a thank you, we'll address it from here and it goes, doesn't necessarily mean that the full report is then given back to all team members, that it would be, kind of focused on team members that needed that information or that had been stakeholders in that information. So I'm just trying to understand that.
So with this situation, this was when it was brought to my attention, it had been some time after. And the person who brought this to my attention felt when they had their discussion with the dismissal of that the person could not have done it. So there's no need for an investigation or a report. Instead, they implemented a program that they have called Bathroom Buddies. So you cannot be in the bathroom alone with a client after this situation. And that the employee who was stated in the allegation continued to work there, and that RBT stated that they did not feel comfortable knowing that there was no investigation or for them, no knowledge about the situation and that it was not being addressed appropriately.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Ia? Okay, Ms. Smith, same statement still stands. Feel free to give a brief statement up to 5 minutes.
Okay. Again, my name is Diamond Smith, and I can say when I reviewed the documentation on the complaint that this instance was not listed on there. So I do apologize if I don't have as many materials as I could have for this instance. In the incident that EF is discussing, I do remember this therapist who they are talking about coming to me and saying that a additional employee came to them with a concern from a parent about difficulties with the client and saying that there was an instance with a employee. And I can say that I took multiple steps to make sure I addressed this situation, because like you guys are saying, and as we all know, our client safety is our most important part about our job. So I did review the cameras. I looked at every schedule that the client had from the time that employee worked until the time that the employee no longer worked with the company, where any instance of any sort of contact with that client would have happened. I looked at that. We took note to say that we made sure that we looked at all of the information for that. I did not dismiss the employee. I told them that I would look into it, which I did. I also worked with the owners because this was an incident that was further out of my scope of competence. I hadn't at any point in time before this had any issue of this sort. So I did work with the owners of the company just to make sure that I could take all the necessary steps, make sure we looked into it, looked at all the evidence. This was not something that we were dismissing at all. I believe Dylan also talked to the employee who said this information to the other employee. So there was a therapist who said the information, but they received it from a different employee who supposedly heard it from the caregiver. And so we were trying to make sure we had all of the information possible, and we did not get a ton of information from the caregiver, who decided they just weren't going to tell us much, from my knowledge. But we did look into it and we documented it. Like I said, I made sure I looked at all of the cameras, and they never told me that they felt like their information was dismissed. And I was also not made aware that this information went to EF on top of that. Yes.
All right. Any questions for Ms. Smith? Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, you said that you documented the incident and the subsequent follow-up. Where is this kept? And if requested, would you be able to provide a copy of that to the board?
I can work on providing a copy to the board. I currently do not have it because I am on vacation. I don't have my computer. So I answered this. I made sure I joined this conference over Zoom on the phone. But we kept it within our company document. So we have reference of it in our box folders, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Perfect. And that does align with what Ms. Huff says. First of all, thank you for being here on vacation. I don't know if that's what the board's going to request. I was just, make a recommendation, or we can request board staff to do it, at a later time. I was just curious if, more so if you would be able to produce it. And so we'll keep you posted if that is a formal request that, we would like to make. As far as, the training goes, and signing off on the trainings, I'm just going to ask a similar question. To what degree in training do you have in mandated reporting in the state of Arizona?
So from what I understand, I also got my information about mandating reporting from Adventure ABA. I've spent all of my career in ABA at Adventure ABA. And to my understanding, it was you are recommended to go to your supervisors, especially if you need help with things. But if you have a concern and you want to report it, absolutely do so.
I have no other questions.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Dr. Davey.
Actually, Dr. Davis-Wilson asked my question, just that if Ms. Smith had the documentation around the internal investigation, and that was housed somewhere in the corporate file structure somewhere, should we be interested in looking at it? And I believe she answered that in the affirmative, correct, Ms. Smith?
Yes.
Thank you. And as my final part of that question is in terms of the internal investigation that you conducted, at the end of that internal investigation, what was the final outcome? What was the final action?
So I can say kind of in multiple parts. On one hand, we did not see any instance where the employee could have done any of the alleged things that they did. On the other hand, the caregivers decided they weren't going to discuss or look into it further with us. So even if there was any extra pieces to it, they cut all ties with the company.
Okay. And then are you aware of any additional investigations around this particular incident that may have happened from external parties with regard to this?
I am not. I do believe, again, this is that whole kind of chain of this person said that. The original person who brought me the complaint said that the person who said it to them said that the caregivers took the client to the doctor and some other information with that. However, we were not given any of that actual factual information. We just got all of the down the line of communication.
And so just to be clear on my question, so if there's some that a doctor that did manage that is a mandatory reporter, just as others that are in the care of children are mandatory reporters, they would have filed a complaint with DCS or with the local authorities. But to your knowledge, there was no follow-up from an external investigative body or state organization with regard to any of this matter?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions for either EF or Ms. Smith?
I think I would just have the same question for EF that Dr. Davey just asked of Ms. Smith. EF, are you aware of any external investigations related to this?
No, yes. Once I told the RBT to report it themselves, they went and reported it. So I believe there is an investigation done through DCS.
Do you? Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Dr. Davey.
So just to redirect back to EF, did the RBT at that time acknowledge to you that they did complete a phone call to DCS with regard to this incident? Like, do you have direct knowledge that that was done?
Yes.
Okay. And how do you have that direct knowledge?
I wasn't there with them for the phone call, but they stepped out of my office and went outside to make the phone call.
And how long did this phone call last?
Approximately 15 to 20 minutes. I know it was long enough for me to get other work done, but not a substantial amount of time.
But then to your knowledge, after that phone call, the agency, you were still at the agency was not contacted with regard to this matter?
No, I left the agency that day.
Thank you.
Can we just confirm again with Ms. Smith, you are currently at the agency, and to your knowledge, there is not any, there has not been any outside agency involved in this particular case, and it is not, to your knowledge, happening currently.
That is correct, and neither the client nor that employee is still at the agency, and I have no knowledge about any external investigations for it.
Okay, thank you for repeating that. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Rates. Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Yeah, Ms. Smith, if you wouldn't mind, can you just describe for me kind of your role in the company as it pertains to the tasks that you do and kind of your org chart?
Yeah. Like,
what's the org chart and what are your responsibilities?
So my responsibilities have kind of varied as time goes on. So before I was a BCBA, I was more so a resource for all of the employees. I worked as a clinical director at Adventure ABA. But even before I was a BCBA, when I was working as a clinical director, I took any and everything to the owners to make sure I was working directly under those BCBAs to kind of proceed with any of the things just so I can get on that knowledge. I am also a BCBA. I work in kind of one of the biggest things that I do is help RBTs and BTs with understanding the clients and how to go about their session. So I do a lot of supervision. But in addition to that, I go and I make sure all of our therapists are having mentor meetings, which are our quick, hey, you're with somebody who has been with the organization for a little bit longer. Do you have any questions? Do you have any concerns? Do you want any more supervision on any cases? So we have those mentor meetings. And so I look at making sure that our employees have mentors and making sure that our receptionist schedule those mentor meetings. If parents come to the clinic with concerns about the company or concerns about the clinic, because we do in-home sessions as well as those clinic sessions, I address those concerns directly. But then I also, again, bring them to the owners, make sure everything is taken care of. And if I am not able to take care of it myself, making sure that I get that additional assistance from the owners. I am a focal point of contact for the most part for the BTs and the RBTs. And I do tell them that they can come to me with anything, but I also tell them that sometimes they're not going to get an immediate answer because things do require that back end of looking into things. So they're not always going to get the immediate answer that they're looking for.
Thank you. And then do you have BCBAs that report to you as well?
As of right now, no. I am working with, we're kind of in a interesting spot right now. So I work with the clinical directors, but I also am acting as a clinical director as well. So I kind of have a multiple position at this moment. But I do work with the clinical directors to kind of make sure that we have some sort of cohesiveness and making sure that we are trying our best to ensure that we are addressing everybody's needs.
So would it be fair to say you kind of oversee it? There's multiple clinical directors, and then those clinical directors are the ones that oversee cases.
Yes. Yeah, so it kind of depends on the timeline that you're asking about, to be a little bit more specific, because where we are right now with our timeline, it is more so the clinical directors all working together and me kind of pitching a little bit more ideas, because we do have, like myself, I was being a little bit farther removed to being just overseeing the clinical directors, but due to some changes within the company, I've mostly just taken over a different clinic. But generally speaking, we kind of go for more of a teamwork dynamic where the BCBAs kind of work together to make sure we can address everything effectively and ensure that we're doing the best for our clients.
Thank you. Do you have an assigned caseload?
Yes.
How many clients do you have on your caseload?
That is a good question. Sorry, I don't have it off the top of my head. One moment, please. I'm gonna try to count. Sorry. Nine, ten.
And you'd say this is consistent across the other BCBAs as well?
Honestly, what happens is as we have people who step away from the company at the BCBAs, we work to make sure our cases are pretty evened out so that nobody has too heavy of a caseload. And we again use that whole teamwork aspect to say, hey, is your caseload too heavy? Do you need any assistance with anything? So it also, it sounds like a lot, but at the same time, my clients are in different time slots in the day. So I have some of those like morning clients and then some of those like later evening clients. So it's a little more like staggered.
Yeah. And I actually, I'm not a fan of just the caseload number by itself, because you've got comprehensive, you've got focused, you've got multiple techs, you've got a single tech, you know, there's so many other contextual variables. So the number is very difficult by itself to kind of gauge. So I totally understand that. And I appreciate that clarification. As far as the RBT training goes, then what is your role in delegating out tasks to an assistant RBT assistant?
Can you elaborate on that question, please, so I can make sure I answer it correctly?
Yeah. So one of the discussion points was around perhaps EF or others not having current materials or adequate training to be able to complete the 40-hour training and as it's defined by the BACB for an assistant.
Yeah.
What is kind of your role with that?
So we have, I know we submitted our supervision logs, and when it comes to those things, we work together to make sure everybody has their supervision hours. So my role is to, one, play my part in that RBT supervision, making sure everybody's being supervised with their different clients and that they're getting that 5%. And then in addition to that, sometimes I'll reach out to other BCBAs like, hey, we're getting closer to the end of the month. This person needs more hours. But generally speaking, we are putting those people into our schedules. Like, I make my schedule typically at the beginning of every month, so that way I can, one, make sure I'm seeing all of my clients, but two, try to pre-plan to see all my clients so I have that extra room for those RBTs just in case anything's missing.
Fantastic. So back to the actual assistant assessor role. So the assistant assessor is able to assist with the RBT competencies. Yes. And they're able to do some or all of the training. It's not defined to what degree, how much can be delegated to that role.
Right.
The BCB does leave that to the licensee to decide. Mm-hmm. What role do you play? At the time the EF was doing trainings, what role did you play?
If there were any concerns about new hires, I would bring them typically to EF because they would have these extra meetings just to kind of check in and see if new hires had any questions. And since they were typically more comfortable with EF and being that trainer, we'd say, hey, please discuss these things. We'll also revisit when we supervise. I do supervise new hires as well, just to make sure I can see, you know, how that training's going, anything that they need to work on. I can provide some feedback, but also provide that, hey, in training, can we go a little bit more over this? And I typically would bring that to the training team as opposed to just one person, just to make sure that it's not kind of like, we typically have a lot of things to do. So it's not just like, oh, okay, I told this one person, it disappears. So typically I supervise EF during direct supervision. I also help with behavior training because I like to throw fun behavior and help to teach them how to deal with them. So I do a lot of behavior training whenever my schedule would allow, but I know the BCBAs kind of be delegated that role kind of to each other to make sure that we already knew that EF had that training and that information to be in that assistant. I'm so sorry. My phone's dying, sorry. In that role, EF was a senior therapist prior to being a trainer. So they had already demonstrated very vast knowledge in the field and those the things that they needed to do to teach that therapist.
And is that something that you had knowledge of and would be comfortable independently assigning EF as an assistant assessor? Or was that something that was just known that she was an assistant assessor and you guys?
Honestly, I've been with the company for 4 years, so I had both of those perspectives, because on one hand, I had seen EF, you know, absolutely in sessions and the things that they had done, but separately, that is their role. And so there's that combination of that knowledge of, one, I know the positions that they've been in, but two, I've also observed them and seen their competency in it.
Okay. And on the training certificates, it lists you, at least on this one, I'm sure it could vary, as an RBT certificate on one of the ones that we received, you're the responsible trainee. Yes. Erin listed as the assessor. To what degree did you provide supervision and oversight to Erin in her role?
So in Erin's role, again, I've mostly supervised Erin in their direct sessions. I provided some feedback every now and then. I am typically one of those floating people who, when I'm not directly doing supervision, I'm kind of like checking to see how all the clients are, how all the therapists are, if anybody needs assistance, things like that. So I've also seen Erin with shadows to kind of give some feedback there. More than anything else, I'd say I went with the behavior training. But yeah, I've supervised Erin directly to also know their competency in that role as well.
What about in just the didactic presentation of the 40 hours?
Dr. Davis and Ms. Smith, I just want to interrupt really quick. Let's make sure we're referring to EF as EF.
I'm so sorry. We're just,
that was my bad, Ms.
them a lot, Ms. So Smith, I agree. Struggle a little bit. Sorry. Thank you.
I actually incorrectly modeled that myself, Ms. Smith, so I do apologize. So if you could, so as far as the didactic training, so completing the 40-hour training was one of her responsibilities, correct?
Yes.
And who was responsible for overseeing that?
So when it came to the 40-hour trainings, I know that in the, it says that some of it or all of it can be given to that assistant, you know, trainer. I know that the BCBAs, we would occasionally sit in on the trainings, but the general oversight would go to first the chief of training, who was also overseen by the owners, to make sure that every now and then the owners would sit in and see that training to make sure that they were still doing a good job consistently. So it would be split where the chief of training would sit in on some of them, but also the owners would sit in to make sure that it was all up to date.
And prior to you signing off as a responsible trainee, how did you verify that procedural integrity checks on the trainer, the assistant assessor, were being completed? If that was that, it sounds like that was the responsibility of the chief of training, but you were signing off as the responsible person. What was the connection that you know that you were able to say yes? This individual is completing this training to fidelity. Mm-hmm. Was there documentation shared? What did that look like? Because you're observing it.
I'm sorry, what was the last piece that you said?
You acknowledge that you weren't observing that portion of it. You were doing the direct care.
Yes. Okay. So I can say in a couple of senses. So on one aspect, typically our trainers will send us kind of like an overview on how training's going, how checklists are going, all these other pieces. So I can say it from that aspect. And then that is the main way that I'm able to check off on it and say that. But again, from my understanding, it says that I am responsible that this person is trained correctly from EF.
Okay. And then for the chief of training or the individual that was kind of the report to for EF, the one that was in charge of making sure content, all of that stuff, does that individual still work for your organization?
It depends on which timeline you're talking about. So we've had two different chiefs of training. And even though that person is kind of that direct person for EF, they still work directly under the owners who are actively a part of the training. Actively a part of making sure that those PowerPoints are up to date. So the owners are typically that person overseeing the chief of training and giving them training, and then again sitting in on additional trainings as well.
So from your experience, if you had to bring concerns of materials or policies or procedures to the attention of your supervisors, who are the owners of the company, kind of what was your experience?
I have never really had any concerns with it. I've just noticed that when we are providing training, that obviously different people learn different. So kind of picking up on some of those skills vary. But I haven't had any concerns about it because I've seen, again, in being in the company 4 years, I've seen the updates on making sure we're keeping our PowerPoints updated and changing things to fit any changes, you know, in the RBC role and in ethics and things like that. So I personally wouldn't have any. However, in hearing some of the feedback that we're getting now, I could say that we should probably add some extra clarification for things just because of all of the concerns that were brought up. But generally speaking, without that prior knowledge, I would say that I didn't have any.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Okay, so let's move on. Well, first, any other questions for Ms. Smith or EF? Okay, so let's move into deliberation. Let's see, Dr. Rates, would you please begin the deliberation?
Yes, I will. There was a lot in this discussion. I think I have some questions and concerns related to some of the complaints that were brought up. I do think for me, maybe seeing some of that reporting is going to be important moving forward. I appreciate the discussion of how supervision was happening in terms of training. I appreciate all of the details that you've provided to help clarify that experience for us. So thank you. I think those are probably my thoughts right now in terms of where I sit with this one.
Okay. Other committee members.
Mr. Chair, I echo similar sentiments, and I know we've had similar conversations in the past that, you know, I think that there's a bigger piece to this, and it's unfortunate that individual BCBAs then kind of get looped into that. But at the end of the day, it's the individual BCBA that's licensed. And so I share similar sentiments. I appreciate Ms. Diamond and or Ms. Smith and her articulation of many of the things, but I still would need more information.
Dr. Davis Wilson, the information you would need more of is, would that be obtained through deliberation, or are you suggesting otherwise?
Mr. Chair, I think that it would probably be an action of the next step that we may want to hear the other case first. I mean, it would, the action would be directing board staff and kind of outlining what it is that we're looking for to kind of table the matter and get more documentation. But I don't want to direct that until we hear, the next one as well, just so that we capture everything.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other comments from committee members? Okay. And then Dr. Rates, I'm assuming you want to take the same action we did with the previous and okay. I'm getting a head nod. All right. So let's move on. Fifth complaint scheduled today is 23-20 against Dylan Huff. And just to confirm, are there any recusals? Okay, so EF again, please unmute and specify your name or your initials, and again, up to 5 minutes for a brief statement.
My initials are EF. With the situation I've kind of previously mentioned, with the overlapping and questionable billing towards the client NH, I know that Dylan was the supervisor at that time. But as I previously stated for that client, I was getting supervised on that day by Ms. Barnes for my RBT hours to make sure that I met my 5%. And then that just questionable billing. And then also going back to the mandated reporting, there was an instance with me personally with a client that I worked on that I brought up and mentioned and was told that the Dylan Huff had discussed with the parents and said that the kid likes to over exaggerate and to not take it seriously, which again at that time I was under the impression that mandated reporting was you report to the supervisors, and so I did dismiss it until I later learned that I need to report it myself, which I did.
Are there any questions for EF?
I have a few, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Dr. Rates?
My first question is related to the supervision discussion that we've had, and I was curious if you could provide, I know that you're not there anymore and this has been a long time, but do you have a date? Do you recall the date of this?
I know that it occurred in October of 2021.
My other question is, you just now shared with us that you had concerns about a complaint. Later, you learned that you should be reporting those and that you did go ahead and make that complaint. To your knowledge, what was the outcome of that complaint that you did file?
When I had made the report, they told me they'll do their best, but I wasn't able to provide them with enough information about the situation. And so they might have a hard time finding the person. But that is to my knowledge that they tried to look into it as best as they could.
And you have not had any follow-up from any outside agency related to that complaint that you made?
No, I have not.
Okay. I think that's all I have for right now.
All right. Dr. Davey?
Yes. EF, question with regard to the last day of employment, which according to records provided by Mr. Huff was October 17th of 2022. He alludes to, in his response through his lawyer, with regard to a group of employees walking out on that day. Can you provide us some information with around what occurred on that day and why the departure?
So for me personally, after I found out the information about what we previously discussed, I did not feel comfortable working there, knowing that this is a situation that has been constantly occurring. So I emailed them immediately and was like, I'll leave all my stuff in my office. Like, I just don't feel comfortable working here due to decisions being made effective immediately. And then to my knowledge, after I had left, I had found out that my roommate was fired and they brought it to my attention. And they told me that they were talking to other people about a contract that they were implementing, which was
previously stated with the with Ms. CA. And so those people who were required to sign that contract met together and decided that they did not want to sign that contract. But I personally was not involved in any of that.
So your decision to depart was yours alone. You did not discuss that with any other employees at ABA Adventure besides your direct supervisor who you informed of your decision to depart?
Yes.
And your roommate at the time that ultimately also left, you did not discuss your thoughts or feelings with regard to the actions you were about to take?
I did not tell them anything until I did leave. And I was like, hey, I just left just to let you know. And then a few hours later, they told me, they were like, oh, sorry, I'm not home. Just to let you know, I've been fired and we're talking and like trying to meet and discuss what we can do. And that was all I knew.
So fired, or were they fired at that point, or did they decide to leave on their own?
My roommate was fired out of that group, but the remaining people, I believe, left on their own will.
And what was the reason for the termination for your employee, for your roommate?
To my understanding, what he told me is that he had a PIP from a while ago that was 2 weeks long. And because he was not signing the contract, and they said, if you don't sign the contract, you can't work and like get paid for it. He left. And so they said that he had walked out. And because of his PIP, that he is breaking his thing and to terminate him. I'm not 100% on that information. It was a while ago. I don't really talk with him like that. That's just what I remember.
Thank you.
Other committee members? Okay, so we'll move on to hear from Mr. Huff. So Mr. Huff, please unmute yourself, state your full name for the record. Mr. Huff, are you represented by counsel?
Yes, I am.
Okay, is it Ms. Burgess that's representing you?
Brianne is here on her behalf.
Okay, all right. So Ms. Quinn, Mr. Huff, go ahead and state your full name for the record, and Ms. Quinn as well. And this is an opportunity for you and your attorney to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and we may have questions for you as well.
Perfect. So, Lisa, my name is Dylan Huff.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brianna Quinn, and I have the pleasure of representing Dylan Huff along with Robin Burgess. We're with the law firm of Sanders and Parks. I won't take up too much time before you guys get to Dylan, but I do want to know a few things for the record. The first is that the complaint filed by EF and a lot of the discussion today is based off of hearsay and not firsthand knowledge from the complainant, and therefore it's not evidence. And the board certainly has the power to get firsthand knowledge if they deem that that's necessary. The second point I would like to make is that there's been numerous new allegations that have been noted during the discussion today that Mr. Huff is not prepared to discuss since we just learned about them this morning. Specifically, I'm referring to what EF just mentioned about how she reported to CPS. We weren't on notice of that, so Mr. Huff is not prepared to discuss that today. The second thing that he's not prepared to discuss is the sexual assault report that was also referred to earlier this morning. We have no notice of that either. So I would request that we be granted time to adequately prepare and discuss, prepare a response for you in order to discuss at a later date. The third thing I will say is that there was also some discussion about Mr. Huff's billing for supervision. And we did address that in our response, but I'm sure that Mr. Huff is chomping at the bit to, you know, get his time to give that explanation to you. So with that, I will turn it over to Mr. Huff. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Dr. Davey.
Ms. Quinn, with regard to not prepared to discuss, will we at least be able to get either a statement as to whether or not Mr. Huff is aware of any ongoing investigations with regard to those discussions or with regard to those two points?
Yes, Mr. Davey. I think that, you know, I'll leave that up to Mr. Huff about if he wants to respond with what knowledge he has. But I do think that any, you know, specifics that I haven't even had a chance to address with my client, I would request be reserved for a later date.
I appreciate that. And I'll make my question just very clear. I just want to know if he's aware of any external investigations that are ongoing by DCS or other state or local authorities with regard to either of those topics. So that would be my question to him, if that's acceptable to you, Ms. Quinn.
Yes, I believe so. Thank you.
Dr. Davey, can we allow Mr. Huff to make his statement and then address that? Okay.
Absolutely. I just made a clarification from counsel before I ask the question.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Huff.
Yes. So again, for the sake of everybody's time, I'm not going to try and reiterate. Everything's kind of already been discussed today. I think the big pieces for me, I know that EF had made a statement kind of about me having billing records for our client NH in November that didn't add up. I was just able to literally pull our billing records for November, and I have no billing records for that client in November. And it was actually in the supervision of a different BCBA at the time. Shortly after, I did continue to supervise Abby Barnes when she was taking over that case for NH. And so there is a note that does overlap where it is me and Abby both there. I was there remotely supervising Abby, supervising Aaron. And so therefore I was billing because I am in network with Mercy Care where Abigail is not. And I only billed for the portion of the session that I was there. It's from 1:30 to 3:00. So that kind of addresses those things right there. And again, as far as the investigations from DCS, from basically the months of about March through December of last year, 2022, I was very removed from my role in the company. I had stepped out for the most part, working almost exclusively remotely, providing consultation and support services as needed. But again, I've been back doing some consultation work again and some, you know, things here and there at the company. And to my knowledge, there are no ongoing investigations. And again, I have a pretty good working relationship with DCS. I have had to file several reports over the years, and I am very familiar with how the system works. And we would have been notified if there was even a phone call at this point of any of the magnitude that was discussed today.
Thank you for that, Mr.
Thank you, Mr. Dr. Davey, you have some questions?
No, I appreciate him answering my question as part of his response. So thank you.
All right, other committee members?
Mr. Chair, I'm just gonna sneak in real quick and give the third code word. For those in attendance, the code word is cherry blossom. Again, that's cherry blossom.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Dr. Davis-Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Huff, thank you for being here. For that date of service, EF has stated that you were not present on one of those dates. Can you, to the best of your recollection, kind of explain what that date may have looked like or why there may have been a misunderstanding of whether or not you were present?
Yeah, given the fact that she's referring to a date in October, I really cannot provide any sort of reason. Again, if I had been there and I had billed any services, it would pull right up in our AccuPoint system as well as our Catalyst system. And I don't have anything for client NH in that month. Again, though, because Abby was so close to being fully independent, licensed in network, like I said, she was fully in network with all the insurance companies in February of 2023 or February of 2022. And so at that point, I was really pretty removed back on the level of support I was providing her. So yeah, when I was going out and doing those one monthly meetings, like I had mentioned, I was, you know, working quite a bit remotely still. So it was more than likely I was remote. Abby was there present. To what reason Aaron can't or EF can't acknowledge why I wasn't there, I don't have a statement, especially given that she's claiming it was in October that she recalls this. And I don't have any records from me treating that patient in November or in October. But EF did acknowledge that there have been times that I have supervised her with Abby, and Abigail also acknowledged those same things.
And Mr. Huff, as far as the emailing of the session notes, what was the direction for having Ms. Barnes email the session notes, and what kind of what did you guys do with those?
We keep all those internally. We actually have made modifications to our Catalyst system now based on some help that Catalyst was able to provide us, where now they can just go in and put in non-billable session notes. But prior, we didn't have a way to do that. Prior, we had to collect all of those session notes externally and keep them. And so that was kind of what we were doing is, again, providing ongoing feedback as well. But if, let's say for this client, NH specifically, I can tell you this client has like, you know, a particular insurance that Abby was in a network with.
Sorry.
So therefore, yes. Every-
wait, hold on. The business.
Yeah. No.
All right. Sorry about that.
I muted that person.
Thank you.
I forgot where I was at in my statement here.
We were talking about Ms. Barnes had not been credentialed with Mercy Care.
Oh, yes, yes. So that was really the thing is, again, those are still my clients, my liability, my in-network status, my credentials, my contracts. So at the end of the day, yes, I did request that everything that they were doing with my patients be sent to me via email. They were also sent to Paige and to usually one other BCBA just for us to, again, keep as part of our client records because we can't submit them off to the insurance given that BCBA is not in network, but they're still seeing my patients in a supervisory role under my supervision.
And to the best of your knowledge, you don't recall a time in which you would have entered a note or a session note having not been in attendance, observing and actually performing the service?
Nope.
I have no further questions.
Okay. Other questions from committee members? Okay. So at this point, we'll move into deliberation. Again, deliberation is a time for committee members to discuss without interruption. Dr. Rates, would you please begin the deliberations?
Yes, thank you. In review of all of the information, which was a lot, I think that for me, there is a need to get some additional documentation as a result of some of the things that were referenced today. Specifically, I think we need to see a bit more about the policies and processes in place for any kind of incident report, how that is reported, where that goes, and who has access to that. I think for me, that's going to be necessary for at least three of these complaints today. For one of the complaints, Abigail Barnes, I still think my initial feelings are similar in that for that complaint, it seems that there was just a disconnect in understanding of licensure law and certification. But for the other three, I think we need more information related to the policies and practices specifically related to incident reports, mandated reporting, training, what that looks like, how that's provided in order to make any final decisions. But interested in what the other committee members.
Other committee members.
Mr. Chair, if I may, sorry, I unmuted but didn't raise my hand. I'm still, and I don't know as far as the best route of what documentation is needed, but I'm still uneasy about even a response. If you've got a technician billing under a supervisor and that technician is unaware that supervisor is present, whether it's that supervisor is on a recording or, you know, telehealthed in or whatever, I still have some concerns around that. I also think that especially in some of the Medicaid contracts, that non-licensed individual can bill. And even though it rolls up into the licensed individual, the documentation is clear as to who provided the service. And so I would be interested in reviewing the session notes and perhaps the emails to see, is this a unique session note that Mr. Huff has has, and across all of the overlaps between Ms. Barnes and Mr. Huff, is this a unique, I was present for the session and therefore I'm writing my own note? Is this a copy and paste from an email where the note was requested? And then does the note that is being provided really outline who's providing what service? Because my other concern would be that if a technician doesn't know that somebody is on telehealth observing a session, does the parent know? And so, you know, when they request a medical record, does it say on the, and it should, the note should clarify who was providing the service and who was present when the service was being provided. So I'm inclined to, you know, to want to see the entire client file as well as the emails sent between Ms. Barnes and Mr. Huff.
Other comments, questions? Dr. Davey.
Yeah, I may be the outlier here. I'm having a really hard time connecting all the dots here. I mean, we've got multiple complaints followed by someone who was concerned based on information obtained, you know, from another party, some information that there's direct knowledge of. Got an outside licensed behavior analyst telling us that there was, you know, nothing that, you know, raised her suspicion around inadequate supervision, inadequate billing. We've got multiple pieces of documentation here that show that supervision is occurring, that there was no question around someone's license. And I'm hesitant to continue on a fishing expedition, to be quite honest. And I appreciate the concern that EF has and has brought forward, but I'm also very mindful of, you know, where we're going and where we're heading. And so I appreciate my fellow committee members wanting to continue to look at documentation, and I'm not opposed to that, but I'm also not feeling that I'm compelled to make sure I see that, given the statements that have been made here today. You know, to me, the most concerning parts are around any particular allegations that DCS may be, you know, having, and be interested to know if ever any of those come to light, or whether the agency is contacted, or whether board staff can confirm or deny that, you know, the DCSF or DCS has an active investigation, or, you know, they'll provide us no information about it, but whether it's active or not. Like, those to me are much more concerning than whether or not, you know, in terms of safety and welfare for the state of Arizona, whether or not the, you know, a secondary supervisor signed off on a note. And so I just have a little different take, I think, on this, given the magnitude of what we've been asked to take a look at today.
Dr. Davis Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Davey, I understand, and I can appreciate your sentiments. I think the concern for me where the disconnect that I was trying to track down with Ms. Barnes was, Ms. Barnes had stated that she didn't know why she was sending the emails with the soap notes, except to just practice. Mr. Huff saying, no, that was a standard because it was a non-billable service and we need it for the record. So there's disconnects in between, and while subtle, Ms. Barnes also said that Mr. Huff was not present at all sessions. So I do think that it would be concerning for him to not be present but have billed. I'm not asking for a secondary supervisor signing off. I'm concerned that we have an individual stating that perhaps Mr. Huff wasn't present. We have the licensed supervisor saying he wasn't always present, and I just sent the notes to him. I didn't enter anything into billing. and potential build appointments that, that even in Mr. Huff's response said, well, yeah, depending on the funder, this is allowable. And I don't know of any funder that allows for someone to not perform the work and still be the one to complete the documentation. I'm trying to word it because I know that things get built up into a responsible parties MPI or a BC provider type. I know that, but the expectation is that the funder should still be able to see who delivered the service. And I would argue to our ethics code that who delivered the service should be very clear to the family. It should be very clear to the RBT. And so to me, there is a connection there. And I'm not sure that, that Ms. Barnes, in her presentation, she did say like, hey, I was new and I was learning all of this and, you know, I didn't see any concerns. Ms. Smith had the same thing of, well, I didn't see any concerns, but now that you guys are talking, I can see where these things are. And so I think it's problematic to, I think this would be different if this was an outside BCBI that came in and is like, no, this is standard or whatever. These are people that grew up in the program. So to expect them to know different, I don't know that I'm comfortable coming to that conclusion myself.
Dr. Davey?
Yeah, and so I think that, again, what the statement that the family's not aware of providing services, that there's multiple people that are not aware, I don't know that I heard that today of who was, that there was a question of whether or not the person who was providing services was not known. I don't know that I connected that dot, that parents weren't aware who was serving their child or that the supervisor was not aware of who was serving the child. I do understand your comment with regard to, if an individual is essentially billing for services that they were not a party to or were not directly related to in one way or the other, that is problematic. But I don't see the other things that came out in today's discussion, that there was a parent concern around any of this. And so, I keep coming back to just some disconnect between an individual that's a trainer that, is bringing second and third hand knowledge forward on issues that, obviously were concerning enough for you have to complete the complaint form. But I am still struggling. So I'll just leave it at that.
Dr. Rates.
Yeah, I think I agree with Dr. Davey. For me, and I appreciate your recommendations, I would like to see and get some further information just related to the complaints. If we can identify whether anything, if there are any active complaints, I think that would be very important to better understand in terms of some of the allegations that were made related to mandated reporting. But that, for me, that is the space that I think I still would like some information and would be interested in how and what information my fellow committee members think would be appropriate for us to resolve that. But information regarding any cases that were opened or that are currently active would be important.
Let's see, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Can I make a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of legal advice?
Sure. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, discussion. Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. We'll go to executive session. Okay, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may, I would like to make a request, and it's going to be that we go ahead and request the additional information for complaint number 2319 and complaint number 2322, and that additional information was related to the incident reporting policies, procedures, the incident reporting documentation, and then any of the documentation pertaining to the incidents that were brought up today in today's meeting or their original complaints. I would also like to make a recommendation and with that request that I would request that we table the matter until we're able to review that additional documentation. I would also like to make a recommendation for complaint number 2320 that we go ahead and table that matter right now until we can see the other two complaints that are on the agenda today. And then for 2321, I would like to move that we dismiss that complaint.
Okay.
Is there a need to separate out that motion? That motion contained, you know, a motion to dismiss one matter and then to continue others and to request additional documentation.
I rescind my motion. I'm going to start with Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, a request that we just table complaint number 2320 until we've been able to hear the other two complaints that are agendized today.
Okay. All right. And do we need to make a motion on that?
Yes, please.
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson, would that be in fact your motion?
Yep. So moved.
Okay. All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All right. Further discussion? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Okay. Motion carries.
My next motion is going to be pertaining to complaint number 2319 and complaint number 2319. Let's just do them all separate, just so it's clear for the record. Complaint number 2319, I move that we direct board staff to gather the incident report documentation, tracking, and current incidents and status of those incidents from the agency and specifically from Ms. Huff.
I'll second.
All right, further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
And I'll go ahead and make a motion on complaint number 2322 in alignment with the complaint for Ms. Huff. I would request that board staff reach out to Ms. Smith to gather the additional documentation that's been noted for the record.
Okay, do we have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I would like to take a look at complaint number 2321. The motion that I will be making is to go ahead and recommend for the full board a dismissal for this complaint. It does appear that perhaps there was an appearance of an association, but that based on the information we've been provided today, this individual does not appear to have violated any statutory requirements.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a second on that?
Second.
Okay, further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Anything further on those, Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Nope, I think that will conclude that agenda item.
Okay. I've got a question for my committee members. Today's session is scheduled to until 3 o'clock. Does anybody have, this will go past 3 o'clock. Betting on where we're at now. Do we want to continue until three? Can members stay after three? And I guess board staff as well.
I do have to leave at 4, as I have a scheduled appointment, but I can always be reached by phone or see if I can get someone else to cover me.
Okay.
Board staff is available.
Okay. Dr. Davis Wilson.
Mr. Chair, if we can do 4, if the committee is able to, I don't see it going past 4. I'm the lead on the next 2 complaints and I don't see it going past 4.
Okay. But we can extend beyond 3 then. Okay. Sounds good. All right. So given that, I've got 2:25. Let's take a comfort break until 2:35. And then we'll begin the further discussion. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just make a point that on our recommendation for dismissal on the 1 complaint, that is the recommendation that will go to the full board from here.
Yes. Thank you, Dr. Davey.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let's see. I'm just okay. So the 6th complaint scheduled, let me just make sure. Yeah. For review today is 2302 against Dylan Huff. Are there any recusals on this one?
Mr. Chair, I do not have a recusal, but I do have a disclosure.
Okay.
I want to disclose that I was the clinical director of the organization that provided ABA services to some of the members mentioned in this complaint. Directorship did include an assistant director, clinical supervisors, and then the actual team that provided the services. So my role was removed outside of directorship things. Never met any of the children involved, nor have I met any of the parties involved in person. I have adjudicated and been a part of other decisions involving these parties and have been able to see them without bias. And I am comfortable moving forward without bias today as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson.
Mr. Stenhoff, I received an email. Ms. Quinn would like to be heard at this time, if at all possible.
Any objections from committee members? Okay. Yeah. Ms. Quinn.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. I apologize, members of the committee, but we're not able, my firm is not able to go past 3. So I just kind of wanted to make that aware. We weren't aware that it was going to go past. So we have another, scheduled work obligation. And then also I would like to know, based off of Dr. Wilson's disclosure that she just gave, that is also news to me that I haven't had a chance to discuss with my client. And I would kind of request the chance to do so before we move forward here today, since she is taking the lead on the next 2 agendized items.
Ms. Galvin, can you provide some legal counsel to us as committee members on that? Or do we need to move to executive session?
I don't believe we have to move to executive session. It's 2:39. Mr. Huff's attorney has indicated that she cannot proceed past 3:00 due to another work engagement, work obligation. And she is also requesting additional time to discuss with her client, Dr. Davis Wilson's recent disclosure about her past involvement. Given those 2 things, particularly, both of them, but the fact that we are, 20 minutes from the time that Ms. Quinn has to leave the meeting, I'm wondering if it is just not appropriate to continue these last 2 matters to provide Ms. Quinn an opportunity to discuss with her client, and then with the recognition that she would have to get off this call at 3:00 and her client is entitled to legal representation at this matter.
Okay. All right. So Ms. Galvin, just for clarification, are you saying that we table this matter until a future so that Ms. Quinn does have time to discuss with her client? Is that?
That would be one of the bases. The other basis is that she does have to leave in 20 minutes for work obligation, and therefore her client, she would not be able to continue on this call to represent her client, and he is entitled to legal representation.
Okay.
And in fairness, it was scheduled till 3. We just went long. Mm-hmm. She, you know, made other arrangements on her calendar with it's understandable.
Yeah. Dr. Davis Wilson.
Can I move to go into executive session for legal advice? I just have one quick question.
Do I have a second?
So moved. I couldn't have you messed
up. I saw Dr. Davey really trying hard here. So
he's trying hard.
All right. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor moving to executive session, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. All right. So given that, do we have any comments or discussion from the committee members regarding the time limit and the information that came with Dr. Davis Wilson being the lead on that?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to, I agree that we're coming up on 3 o'clock. If there's any pertinent, important party that can't be here, that we should honor that. We have, however, already reviewed the materials. And one of the things that at least I was going to present, but I know others may have, is that there's actually additional information that we were going to be looking for anyway. And so my suggestion, my request would be, would the committee be in agreement with having either the lead or the chair coordinate with board staff and Mr. Huff and his attorney the additional documentations we were going to ask for today anyway. I don't know if anybody else has any thoughts on that.
Committee members?
It makes sense to be able to move forward at a later date with all the information we know we're going to need. So I would not want us to just exit this meeting due to time constraints and then come back at a future date and then just make a request for more information. I don't think that's advisable for anybody on this call. So I think we should probably just kind of go to the point of what other information would be helpful and then get this rescheduled.
Okay. Is that agreeable to all the committee members?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I would just ask Ms. Quinn if that's okay with you that we go ahead and table this and then we'll, work with board staff to let you and Mr. Huff know what it is that we were just going to ask for anyway.
Of course, we're happy to provide any information, and I appreciate this being rescheduled to a later date.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. So given that is the last agenda item that we were going to address today. And so we are going to be moving into recess as we'll continue this meeting tomorrow. I am looking for my script here.
Do we need to clarify for the record about agenda item number 5 regarding his order being tabled as well for the record, Ms. Galpin?
I think that would be best. And the CBA meeting is being continued until tomorrow, but any matters involving the current respondents will be tabled and heard another day. We just spread the meeting out over 2 days, but anyone who appeared today is not part of tomorrow's meeting.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Do we need to do anything other than that statement that was just made?
No.
Okay. All right. Great. So, all right. Well, thank you, everybody. So what we'll be doing is recessing at this time, and the current time is 2:50, and we'll resume the meeting tomorrow, March 31st, 2023 at 9:30 a.m. So I will see you all then.